In June of 2017, U.S. Representative Rick Crawford told Talk Business and Politics he plans to run again in 2018. Unlike 2016, the Jonesboro Republican may have a Democratic challenger in the form of a, quote, semi-retired cattle rancher. Mike Nelson of Arkansas County said he is working on a campaign to challenge Crawford in 2018. We spoke by phone about his plans if he's elected and his thoughts on how to handle health care in Arkansas. Let's get into a little bit about your background. You know, as we talked a little bit before, and you are deeply rooted in Arkansas.
Yes, family farm since 1857. Same family, straight down. We have 1,100 acres nestled in amongst the Hartz family that has several thousand, the Eldridge family that has several thousand, the Dunklin family that has several thousand, and everybody wants us.
Right.
So we do our best to maintain our own. We grow rice and beans and crops. We have invested in our water and our recapture of water to try to be as environmentally sound as possible. And then we have a bow, hurricane bow, that flows right through the middle of our property. And it is basically a small, narrow creek ditch. And every time it rains more than 2 inches, it floods over quite a bit of the outlying, you know, the bordering fields.
Mm-hmm.
So about almost 10 years ago now, I went in and fenced those floodable areas off that were not, I mean, we could raise rice once every 3 years, but every time we put soybeans in, they would get flooded out. So I took those out of row crop production and brought in a cattle herd, trying to diversify our income, trying to keep us to be survivable and self-sufficient by providing diverse income.
Let's talk a little bit about your campaign, for starters. If you were elected, what do you plan to do within your first 100 days?
Number one, we have a lot of U.S.-owned factories that are located around the world, China, Indonesia, and they're in abouts that are on 20-year leases or 30-year leases that were signed up in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And the economics, growing middle-class wages in China, growing shipping costs, growing security costs, growing transportation costs here in the U.S., all of those economics are stepping back around to say, you know what, for the next 20 years, it makes more sense to bring those factories back to the United States and not risk them being out around the world. Asa Hutchison has worked on Chinese-owned companies and mm-hmm. invited them to come here, a la the Forest City Clothing Factory, which, I mean, just think through this. If it makes sense for a Chinese factory to locate here in eastern Arkansas, why does it not make sense, why wouldn't you think it would make sense, that U.S.-owned factories, U.S.-leased factories, would be available here? But the only two states that are doing serious lobbying to these U.S. companies are Utah and Ohio. Mm-hmm. Ohio, of course, being led by John Kasich, I'm going to tell you, that's a smart man. If you've never read his book, Two Paths, you really should, because Kasich understands real world economics. He's not a fluff guy. I know he's a Republican, but he's somebody that I know I could work with across the aisle to bring better businesses and better programs here to eastern Arkansas. And there's no legislative push right now by Crawford's office or by Westerman or Womack or French Hill. There's none, zero. So that is a void that I can see and want to step in and work on. The second big thing on my agenda is our ag community. Eastern Arkansas runs off of agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And, Crawford is very entrenched within the ag industry. And I have had arguments with the Arkansas Rice Council and the U.S. Rice Federation not against opening Cuba trade, I want to open the Cuba trade. I think it would be very beneficial, like I said, again, especially for eastern Arkansas, because the top two agricultural imports for Cuba are rice and chicken. That hits us square in the nose. We're good at it, you know? I mean, that kind of rings home, you know what I'm saying? If we were to open Cuban trade for Arkansas rice and were able to capture all of Cuba's business, it would be the third largest trade partner we would have for Arkansas rice. It would also be the fourth largest trade partner Arkansas poultry would have. That's their staple, rice and chicken. So those two industries are missing out on opportunities. Rick Crawford is a proponent of opening Cuba trade, but he is part of this right wing of the Republican Party, the Freedom Caucus. He says he's not a member, but he votes lock and stop with them. He was supposed to be a moderate, and a moderate is supposed to be a person that works across the aisle and, you know, will write legislation bipartisan. Had he done that on his Cuba bill, he would have had 150 Democrats that supported him, had he written it and gone about it in a bipartisan manner. But he didn't. He stayed completely on the Republican side, wrote it as a completely partisan Republican bill, and there were 25 to 30 of the Florida representatives that get a lot of their money from Cuban nationals and Cuban interests, and they all told him, no, we do not want to open Cuba trade because Cuba is still a repressive regime. Well, Rick Crawford's idea, and this is, I've got this in a direct quote in an email from him, an elegant compromise that he proposed: a 2% tax on all ag products sold to Cuba, across the board, 2%. That money will be paid to 6,000 claims against the Cuban government filed by U.S. companies and U.S. citizens, not by the refugees from Cuba, to the tune of $18 billion. Because they believe, or they have filed these claims because they were aggrieved when the Castro regime took over the country in the 50s, and they lost property. And if you think through who those people are, you might think about why I'm a little bit upset at 2% of my pocketbook going to pay those people back. You don't extort money from me, from my family, from Eastern Arkansas. You don't extort money from us to pay losses from 60 years ago. And that is my argument right there.
Well, while we're still speaking about the economy, you have some similarities to Crawford when it comes to businesses and agriculture.
Yes.
So how do you think your background will help drive the economy for the First District?
I have been a small business owner since I was 20. I started my first retail store. It was a baseball card store in Stuttgart when I was 20. I was still driving back and forth to ULR to get my bachelor's. I was playing baseball, and I met great, wonderful people. In the early 90s then, about 93, I went to work for a commodities brokerage company, a commodities trading company. And I worked for them until 97, and then I started my own. And within 3 years, I started off with 5 basic customers. Within 3 years, I built that to about 800 national and international customers, and I relocated my office down to Dallas, down to actually Main and Pearl in downtown Dallas. And the numbers of people that I met, talked to daily, the amount of financial benefit, you know, I mean, not just book learning, but, you know, day-to-day financial skills, financial understandings. Mm-hmm. I can equate that now. I can bring that back now to understand in depth, very in depth, not only our microeconomics of our region, but our macroeconomics of our global position. Those go over the heads of most people, but they don't meet. Mm-hmm. They hit me square in the forehead. And even though I understand Representative Crawford has worked his way forward on some of these issues, his background was being a radio voice, and he's never signed a check for somebody else. I have. I've signed the check for my employees. I've signed the check, my own check. And I've never had the mindset that my life has to revolve around someone else signing my check. So when you have that approach, when you have the ability to see all facets, see all sides, it really gives you a skill level that, you know I can be a benefit to each and every district and, you know, each and every county, each and every city. And that is my goal in the next 18 months or 17 months is to travel to each and every county and each and every major city two or three times in our district. I was very disheartened when I was reading a newspaper article, and I see the U.S. Rice Federation president, he quotes Rick Crawford as being the Arkansas representative of Northeast Arkansas. That's in print. This is what has struck me more than anything else. Rick Crawford only shows up in Jonesboro in the Northeast. I mean, this is a huge district.
Right.
We go from Louisiana border to Missouri border. Every single county that borders I-40 and then goes south, which would all be in my district, they don't even know what he looks like. They've never met him. It's going on 8 years that he's been the representative for this district, and they don't know him. He's done nothing for them.
Kind of in the same vein of that, so you're running as a Democrat.
Yes.
And recently, the House race in Georgia, it was the most expensive House race.
Yes.
A lot of people were thinking that it was going to tip in the scale of Democrats.
Too awesome, right.
Right. Unfortunately, it didn't. You know, some are saying, you know, trying to chalk it up as something that's really a step forward. Others are saying it is a wake-up call. What were some of the key takeaways from that race that you picked up? And, you know, you mentioned a lot of the people in the southern part of the first district, you know, haven't had a chance to meet Crawford. And that was one of the criticisms with the Democrat running. He said he didn't live in the district. So.
Exactly. and Brandon, Ossoff's campaign is that he really... I mean, I've never met him. I've never talked to him. I actually sent an email to his campaign to see if they would converse with me, but I'm sure they were so busy they never sent anything back. But he really wasn't the local person. And even though Handel, the lady that won, was not an ideal candidate, she talked more directly. She fit in more directly as a person of her district. They, you know, her district felt more comfortable with her as just an appearance person.
Mm-hmm.
Ossoff tried to run a very straight, don't make any mistakes, just toe the line. And I think that's what Democrats have been losing. I think that's what they've been trying too much, is to try to be so perfect that you don't offend the far right or you don't offend the far left. And I'm going to tell you, it's lost. Eight straight years. That is lost. I am a member of my district. I am an absolute ground floor, grassroots owner of where I live and who I deal with and who I represent. And I really don't think when I get down to if I win the primary, and so far there have been a couple of other challengers that have been talked about, but none have filed. I don't think Rick Crawford can truly stand up to my knowledge base, to my deep roots, to my deep understanding of our district, of Eastern Arkansas. And he's never had a challenger like myself. He really hasn't.
Let's talk a little bit about health care.
Yeah.
You know, recently the Senate, they just released their version of the health care bill.
Yes.
Some saying that it was...
more austere than the House version. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the House version, you know, Trump called it mean. And you kind of shared a sentiment with it. You called it an absolute piece of junk.
It is.
What did you mean by that? And what do you think should have been done differently specifically?
Well, when you take insurance means a pool, P-O-O-L, a pool of people. And insurance only works when you have a large enough pool that there are enough healthy people that don't file claims but pay a premium to offset the amount of sick people that have to file claims. And what the Republican do-nothing Congress has done for several years now is deter and destroy and intimidate and talk all of the healthy you know, non-claim filing individuals to not being a part of it, to not being a part of the Affordable Care Act. They have spent enormous amounts of energy and effort and money to discourage anyone from joining health care. And so the only people that have been registered and have gone in have been those that absolutely have to have it because they have no other choice. There's nothing else. You can't get anything else. And that has so overwhelmed the insurers because they're taking losses. T.R. Reid writes a great book. T.R. Reid is a phenomenal author, and he has gone around the world and has looked at different healthcare systems, different federally funded, different, you know, socially funded, different private. The United States stands out as the only one that truly bases our healthcare off of health insurance companies, off of health insurance companies making a profit. And in T.R. Reid's book, he'll quote to you the definition. Insurance companies in the United States operate on 25 to 26% overhead. Take that into comparison, the government-run Medicare program is 3% overhead. Think through that for a minute. T.R. Reid comes back after 3 years of researching this book all over the world, and he's from Colorado, and Colorado has a proposal on the books to create a state-run Medicare program for everybody. Get rid of all the rest of it. Get rid of all of it. We're going to do our own state-run Medicare. So T.R. Reid was the chairman. Now, he will admit that they made a mistake when they wrote the bill. Their overall analysis of every dollar spent in Colorado on health care is about $35 billion. They proposed a state-run Medicare that covered every person, regardless of age, regardless of anything, every person in the state. And they did it with basic hospital services and doctor visits and wellness visits and ambulance services. All that was covered. And the cost that they saw was $25 billion, $10 billion less. Unfortunately, they wrote the title to say a proposal to authorize $25 billion for the health care, and that got shot down because it is a 25 billion. The population in Colorado did not know that they were already spending 35 billion. Mm-hmm. All they saw was 25 billion in the title, and they shot it down. That proposal, that state-run Medicare, was originally proposed by Vermont. Vermont tried to do it, but Vermont's only 600,000 people. There's not a big enough pool. So they just couldn't make the money work. They couldn't make it work. But now Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire are going together, and they're going to try to do a regional health care, Medicare program. It makes sense. Insurance companies still make their money. They still can sell their, you know, addendum riders. But the overhead is 3% versus 27% or 26%. In my mind, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Louisiana are perfect for each other. But that would put us $10 million in a pool. That's very well diverse. We have the similar geography. We have similar, you know, health concerns. And it would make sense. Now, you take that back and look at that proposal. Look at that, at the benefits of that. Look at the, you know, the complete picture of that. And then put that up against the AHCA. It doesn't just take, I mean, I've heard this number several times, the CBO score of, well, 23 million people won't have insurance. You have to remember there's already 25 million that still don't. You're talking about almost 60 million people, in reality, that will go self-insured. I remember, not too long ago, a very good friend of mine, a very good customer of mine from Muleshoe, Texas. And I talked to her every day from 1997 till 2003, till she passed away. She had a congenital weight problem. Metabolism just would not, you know, she couldn't. She just couldn't get it to function. Mm-hmm. Every day, even though I would, you know, buy and sell something from her every day she would give me an update on her diet. On, you know, I've lost a pound a day, or I've, you know, gained 2 pounds yesterday. Every single day for 5 or 6 years, she was trying to do everything she could to be healthier because it was you know, her diabetes was getting rampant. She was covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield in Texas. The only surgery, the only medical benefit that any doctor could recommend to her whatsoever to help preserve her life and lengthen her life was a lap band, you know, whatever that's called, the gastro, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Cross would not cover it. It was a $15,000 surgery. Blue Cross would not cover it because they said it was not life-threatening. She tried and tried and tried several different claims for several different years and got turned down repeatedly because Blue Cross denied her coverage for it. She finally went to Mexico, got it done down there. It did not do right, and she passed away within a year.
Wow.
And I have heard people say, well, I don't want the government telling me what I can do or not do. That's what we used to have. We used to have people live and die based on whether an insurance company thought it was profitable or not. I don't want to go back to that. I'm sorry, I don't. I don't want to go back to my local hospital not being able to pay their bills, not being able to pay their employees because they were waiting on a payment check. I mean, a lot of people want to be revisionist. They want to think about the good old days. I'm going to tell you, the good old days in healthcare was not that good.
All right. I want to ask you one more question. If people want to learn a little bit more about you and your platform, where can they go?
I have a Facebook, Mike Nelson for U.S. Congress. Under Mike Nelson Facebook is a picture of me in a red, sweaty T-shirt with sunglasses on, leaning up against the fence that I built that morning.
Wow.
It was July 15th of 2012. It was the hottest day we've had in this decade.
No wonder you can remember it so well.
It was horrible. And we were inside we had 80 yards of fence to pull that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had taken that picture 2 hours later, I'd have been dead on the ground.
Oh, wow.
But they can look me up if they will friend me on that. Then I can put them into my Mike Nelson for U.S. Congress private group. It's a discussion group. I will have here in the next few coming months a public banner page to keep up with where I am. I've got 8 events, I think, 8 travel appearances scheduled right now for the next month and a half. I am doing my best to go to each and every county, Chamber of Commerce, Rotary Club, and then trying to host a evening Meet the Candidate town hall forum. Come in at 6 o'clock, and we'll talk about issues till we're done.
Okay.
I want to be able to do that in every single county, in every single major city in every single county. And there are 30. Well, there's 28. We have 28 complete counties in the Eastern District and 2 partials. That's a huge territory.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm gonna represent my district, I am going to be representative of my district. I am going to talk to my people of my district. I want to meet them. I want to go to church with them. I want to have a lunch with them. I want to laugh with them, drink a beer with them. I mean, that's plain and simple. That's who a person should be that represents this district, because that's who we are as a people.
All right. Well, Mike Nelson, running for 1st District of the U.S. House here in Arkansas. Thank you so much for your time.
Brandon, you have a blessed day, my friend, and I appreciate your time. I appreciate you inviting me on, and I hope that I can make a difference. And thank you for giving me a moment.
Brandon Tabor, KASU News.